It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News Team. Now, here's what's happening.
What happened and when in Uvalde? Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Webster. We begin with the changing story of just what happened when a gunman showed up at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas.
It was reported that a school district police officer confronted the suspect that was making entry. Not accurate. He walked in unobstructed.
This Victor Escalon with the Texas Department of Public Safety. The disclosure that the shooter faced no resistance entering the school and was able to keep initial police response at bay for an hour has left many angry, including the mayor of Uvalde.
What I did see was officers shielding themselves and bringing kids out of classes. And you know, if this timeline was truly an hour, it's unacceptable.
However, former homicide detective and retired Connecticut police officer Brian Foley cautions against rushing to judgment of the police response while the complete picture has yet to be seen and emotions are still running sky high.
And when it's emotional and raw like this, people look for answers and they look for somebody to blame. And I think that right now they're blaming the police officers, and that's a natural reaction as cops. You kind of understand it.
Foley says if it had been a case of police cowardice, we'd already be hearing about it from individual cops who are on the scene.
We're not hearing that right now, which tells me the cops on the scene knew what the situation was, knew where the containment was, and had to hold back and not enter what we call, which is the doorway to the classroom, a fatal funnel at that point, as you have an armed gunman with lots of ammunition, a high-powered rifle. And if you go through that doorway at that point, you're guaranteed of getting killed. And the gunfire had stopped.
One of the first officers inside was off-duty Border Patrol agent Jacob Alvarado. This after his wife, a teacher in that school, texted him a call for help. He stopped the haircut he was in between getting, borrowed a shotgun from the barber, and dashed to the school. Once inside, he and other agents were able to guide his daughter, a student there, many other kids, safely outside. The Uvalde massacre took yet another tragic turn yesterday when the husband of slain teacher Irma Garcia collapsed and died of a heart attack, this shortly after laying flowers on her memorial site.
They were such a close family. It was such a close family, and you could tell that there was so much love between the parents. He was a wonderful young man.
Teacher Ida Hernandez. The Garcias were high school sweethearts. They've been married 24 years. The National Rifle Association Convention, which opens today in Houston, has become a flashpoint for the red-hot gun control debate. CBS's Matt Piper says Texas Governor Greg Abbott has decided against appearing there in person.
He will instead address the group via video and hold an afternoon news conference in Uvalde. Others also now not attending that convention include singers Lee Greenwood and Don McLean.
Former President Donald Trump says he does plan to keep his planned speaking commitment there. Meanwhile, the former president has also been told he must speak under oath in New York State's civil probe into his financial dealings.
A state appeals court is upholding a Manhattan judge's original ruling to subpoena Trump and two of his children to answer questions under oath in Attorney General Letitia James's investigation. In a statement, James claimed victory, vowing to continue following the facts of the case to ensure no one can evade the law. However, the Trump family could still fight the ruling if they take it to the highest court of appeals. I'm Natalie Migliori, NBC News Radio, New York.
Now across the globe, the battle for Ukraine rages on. Speaking through a translator, Ukraine's deputy defense minister says Ukrainian forces are up against it right now in the country's eastern Donbas region.
The situation remains complex and shows signs of further aggravation. The enemy used all forces and means to capture our territory and surround our troops. The fighting has reached its maximum intensity to date.
In a late-night address, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky pleaded with the West to, quote, stop playing around in its efforts to help his country end the Russian invasion. Specifically, he called out some EU nations for blocking tougher sanctions against Russia. He says strengthening pressure on the country would literally save lives. Retired four-star General Jack Keane tells Fox News the U.S. also needs to stop delaying and give Ukraine more advanced artillery so they can match Russian firepower.
The fact that we've been dallying with this, I've been told again, out of fear that we're going to provoke the Russians. I mean, the Russians are going to go to war with NATO because we're providing Ukrainians a longer range artillery system than what they have. I doubt that seriously.
And then there's North Korea, which continues to saber rattle with a flurry of new ballistic missile tests.
Each of the leaders condemned these launches, underscored that the launches are a continued threat to regional and global security.
Pentagon spokesman John Kirby, who says the U.S. and its allies are increasingly concerned about those launches, calling them provocative. In response, the U.S. sponsored a U.N. Security Council resolution that would have stepped up sanctions against North Korea, but it was vetoed by China and Russia. Carnival Cruises is sending a ship from Florida to bring home more than 3,000 stranded passengers and crew from Grand Turk in the Caribbean after a fire yesterday aboard the Carnival Freedom. The ship was docked when that fire broke out. No injuries were reported. An actor famous for his role in Field of Dreams has passed away.
Hey, is this heaven?
No, it's Iowa.
Ray Liotta died in his sleep while in the Dominican Republic filming a movie. This according to his publicist. Liotta rose to fame in 1986, receiving many supporting role awards for the film Something Wild before starring as Shoeless Joe Jackson in Field of Dreams in 1989. That just 1 year before his most famous film was released, Goodfellas. Liotta was 67 years old. Today marks the beginning of one of the busiest travel weekends of the year. AAA's Andrew Gross says, pricey gas or not, a lot of folks are still hitting the road.
Despite these record high gasoline prices, we are expecting, based on what we're seeing from Memorial Day, that it's going to be a very robust travel period for summer. People just want to get out and go.
AAA says the average price for gas in New York right now is $4.93 a gallon, diesel at $6.48. In Pennsylvania, gas is averaging $4.76 a gallon, diesel at $6.26. Still to come on the Noon Report, a deadly explosion in Pennsylvania, the latest on the gun control debate in New York and PA, and the return of Corning's Glass Fest.
Good afternoon. We're tracking showers and thunderstorms for the afternoon and evening, but improvement comes as we move through the Memorial Day weekend. Weather forecast details are coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right. Thank you very much, Kevin. Now checking the stories, making news where you live. A Pennsylvania neighborhood is in ruins today after a house explosion last night. At least four people died, two others hurt in that blast in Pottstown, about 40 miles north of Philadelphia.
Originally thought it was like really loud thunder just nearby, but it shook.
All of a sudden the house shook. When the house shook, my back bedroom door kind of shook too. My son jumped and he was like, what was that?
I felt it from my house, and then I just came out. My mom was outside, and I came outside, and I saw, like, the ambulances and the fire trucks.
Several homes were either damaged or destroyed, with debris all over the street. All schools were closed in Pottstown, PA today, as investigators try to piece together what happened. Going nowhere. That's the trajectory of new gun control legislation in Pennsylvania. A Democrat plan to ban the sale and possession of high-capacity semi-automatic firearms has failed in Harrisburg.
We have a lot of hunters in our state. I can tell you right now, my Uncle Dick in his deer stand, he does not need an AK-47.
The gun debate alive and well in New York, too, of course. There's an effort afoot in the state to ban the sale of such weapons to anyone under age 21. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand spoke at a gun control rally this week.
An 18-year-old cannot even rent a car, but he is yet allowed to buy a military-style weapon that is designed to kill large numbers of people.
Western New York Congressman Joe Morelli wants what he calls common sense gun control legislation that would require universal background checks and a strengthening of red flag laws. The Rochester Democrat says gun control is not just a state-level issue.
You can easily cross state lines, and we see that happening every day. We see the move of illegal guns across this country every single day in the thousands, and they end up on streets all across America, and they end up in the hands of the wrong people. That's why federal action is so important.
In Albany, the State Assembly and Senate plan to take up gun control legislation before lawmakers adjourn for the summer next weekend. Here's former New York City cop Brandon Tatum with his take.
Gun legislation is not going to work here. You can add as many laws as you want to the books, and if a person does not care about killing people, he definitely don't care about any of the gun laws.
Police Detective Randy Sutton says instead of focusing on eliminating guns, lawmakers need to pay more attention to improving school security.
We've seen school districts removing the school resource officers and officers from the schools because of their political leanings. And that is exactly the opposite of what needs to take place. A police officer in a school means a safe school.
Meanwhile, in another mass shooting, the final four funerals are happening this Memorial Day weekend for the 10 victims killed in Buffalo's Tops supermarket massacre. The 18-year-old suspect in that case due back in court on June 9th. Law enforcement agencies in Buffalo are investigating whether a former federal agent might have had prior knowledge of that attack on the grocery store. We get that from Family Life's Bob Bryce.
Yeah, Mark, this story was first reported by the Buffalo News. Law enforcement sources with direct knowledge of the investigation say a former federal agent was among a small group of people to have regular interactions online with the gunman. Now the question's being raised. Did this agent know in advance that 18-year-old Peyton Gendron was going to attack that Tops store on Jefferson Avenue? A half hour before he opened fire in the parking lot, the shooter posted a racist diatribe and invitations to watch the massacre live on the social media site Discord. The former federal agent's relationship with the gunman is part of the ongoing investigation. Bob Price, Family Life News.
An unauthorized adult who gained entrance to the Elmira, New York High School yesterday caused some high anxiety among parents, Rachel Fernie among them. She's a mother in the district.
If somebody had had any kind of weapon and walked into that school, so many children are at risk. And for this to happen right after the massive event that just happened in Texas is absolutely terrifying. Why are the students able to open those doors and let other people in? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Two students invited that adult into the building. Anyone not a current student or staff member must report to a visitor center upon entering Elmira High School. A child psychologist from Western New York says our kids today need more supervision, both in person and online.
This is a hard time to be a young person in this country, in this world. There's so much going on, and there's so much information that young people have to navigate constantly.
Dr. Sarav Sengupta at Oshai Children's Hospital in Buffalo says moms and dads can't be afraid to pull the plug on their kids' social media use.
Sometimes you have to go a little bit old school here. You go to your router and you reset your password, or, you know, if it's a little bit of a pain for you, you turn it off, you know, until you get to have some positive pro-social interaction together as a family.
He fears children today are becoming increasingly isolated and turning to social media for validation. Both the 18-year-old gunman in the Texas and Buffalo shootings were heavily involved, perhaps even addicted, to online activity. Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry is refusing to testify before the House committee investigating the January 6th Capitol attack. That panel subpoenaed Perry and four other GOP lawmakers to appear for a deposition. Perry says the committee has no subpoena power and is abusing its authority. Recently discovered remains of military veterans are getting a proper send-off in Pennsylvania. That story now from Family Life's Brian Query.
Over the past several months, the cremated remains of 15 veterans were discovered, along with remains of nearly four dozen others, in storage at the Westmoreland County Coroner's Office east of Pittsburgh. Some have apparently been in storage for up to 30 years. Those remains will finally get a proper recognition. The 15 veterans' remains were identified with help from the Missing in America Project. According to Coroner Tim Carson, his office will be holding a formal memorial service for the fallen veterans before laying them to rest with full military honors at the National Cemetery of the Alleghenies. Plans are in the works to construct a small mausoleum-type space to house the other remains, plus any similar cases handled by the office in the future. Brian Query, Family Life News.
Glassfest is back in Corning, New York after a two-year hiatus due to COVID. The Crystal City's buzzing again with live glass-blowing demonstrations, art vendors, and family-friendly activities.
We've heard from people all over the country that can't wait to be back here to experience it like it used to be.
Colleen Fabrizi with Corning's Gaffer District.
There is something going on every minute of every day. If you happen to be someone who just wants to stroll and get some great food and listen to music, we've got that. If you want to do some great shopping, we happen to have over 250 small businesses and all of our artists. I mean, there's just something here for everybody.
Historic Market Street will be closed to traffic for the three-day Glass Fest, which runs through Sunday. Special events will be happening on Market Street and, of course, at the nearby Corning Museum of Glass. It's 14 past the hour. That's the time we like to check sports.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Mika Zibanejad scored New York's only goal last night, and that's not usually a recipe for success against the Carolina Hurricanes. They scored three times to give them a 3-2 lead in this best of seven series. Game six will be at the Garden tomorrow night. Edmonton is moving on to the Western Conference Finals after eliminating Calgary 5-4 in overtime. Some familiar faces are heading back to the NBA Finals. For the sixth time in the last 8 years, the Golden State Warriors will play for the title. Last night, Klay Thompson knocked down 8 3-pointers, finished with 32 points to lead Golden State. Steph Curry, who finished with 15, named the MVP of the series. To baseball, the Yankees keep on winning. Nestor Cortez went 8 strong innings and picked up his 4th win on the season. Aaron Judge drove in a pair of runs. And newly signed Matt Carpenter scored twice in the Yankees' 7-2 win over Tampa Bay. Detroit, Kansas City, Boston, Toronto, and Texas also won their games. Over in the National League, JT Realmuto hit a home run, and Aaron Nola went 8 1/3 innings, struck out 10, and they led the Phillies past the Braves 4-1. Elsewhere, the Reds just clobbered the Cubs 20-5. For Cincinnati, it was their highest scoring game in 23 years. Kyle Farmer, 4 hits, 2 of them home runs, drove in 5. Washington, Milwaukee, and the Dodgers also won. The Dodgers blowing out Arizona 14-1. Freddie Freeman went yard and also had 5 RBIs. That is a look at sports.
Still to come on the Noon Report, Capital Connection.
If the scriptures are true, they're true about even moments like this one. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Yesterday, when our writing team gathered to discuss the horrific events at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, we struggled, like many of us, to know even what to say. Yet another evil attack on vulnerable children. Evil still so shocking, it's impossible to fathom. At the same time, though the names have changed, the story is horrifyingly familiar. On Tuesday morning, an 18-year-old young man shot his own grandmother before driving to his former elementary school, ramming through the security gate with his car and barricading himself in a classroom. When it was all over, 19 children and 2 teachers had been killed. And if that were not horrible enough, it came only days after 2 other mass shootings. On May 15th, 1 man was killed and 5 more wounded at a California church. And the day before that, 10 were killed in a racially motivated attack in Buffalo, New York. Over 30 dead in less than a week. And for what? This simply should not be. We're left with a lot of uncomfortable questions. How long will it be before something like this does happen again? Why does this keep happening? Why does it seem to happen here in America and not nearly as much in other places like Britain or Australia? Why didn't it happen here a generation or two ago? What's plaguing young men in our culture who are far more likely to commit acts of evil like this? Clarity is elusive, much less progress. As a friend pointed out to me, it's quite possible that younger generations are being conditioned to think that these events are normal occurrences and that retreating to political corners and blaming others is the normal way to respond to them. That would be a tragedy upon a tragedy. Still, what hasn't changed in any of this is that God has called his people to a particular time and a particular place. And he's called us to be a part of his redemptive work in the world in this time and in this place. While the temptation to just do something at times like this can be misleading, we do have resources given to us by God in Scripture, and they apply to times even as crazy as these. First, the Psalms of Lament and the Imprecatory Psalms offer godly direction for our rage and sorrow. Not just once or twice, but repeatedly, God invites his people to weep before him for the sorrows of the world and to be angry at the injustices we experience. Second, the Apostle Paul gives us something to do at times like this, to mourn with those who mourn. This instruction matches the incarnational way that God in Christ Jesus interacted with his fallen world. He was with us. May God give strength to his people in Uvalde, Texas, right now to be the church there. And at the same time, this is another symptom of culture-wide brokenness. So all of us have the same kind of incarnational work to do. And we can do this work because of what we learn from the shortest verse in the Bible. In one of the most poignant moments in Scripture, we read simply that Jesus wept. In Bethany, Christ joins in with a dead man's sisters in their mourning for their loss. And what makes all of it so astonishing is that Jesus knows that he's about to raise Lazarus to life again. And by doing so, he's going to end the family's suffering, even turn it into a party. Yet, he's not aloof. He's not dismissive with their grief. Instead, he weeps with them for the pain of a fallen world, for the unnaturalness of death, for the hopelessness people feel in the face of tragedy. Because Christ, who had the power of life and death at his command, can weep with those who weep, we can certainly do the same. And finally, we do have the gift of knowing that one day death itself will be cast into hell. So we do not grieve as those without hope. One day, everything sad will become untrue. And because we do not weep as the world weeps, the church has so much to offer when the world weeps, like right now. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 minutes past the hour as we check in with Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast. Our call for this afternoon, though, rather cloudy, humid into tonight, with showers from time to time. Watch for a thunderstorm with a downpour. High temperatures this afternoon, 70s to near 80, low tonight, 50s and low 60s. Tomorrow, cloudy in the morning, a shower, some drizzle, followed by some afternoon sunshine. But skies will stay pretty cloudy across central New York and eastern Pennsylvania with some showers. Highs in the 60s and low 70s. But Sunday, Monday, sunnier, warmer, 70s on Sunday, 80s for high temperatures on Monday.
You're listening to The Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues. At the state capitals, they are, as always, Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Gentlemen, the worst mass shooting since Sandy Hook happened this week in Texas, and that has reinvigorated the gun debate in this country. Jason, I'll begin with you. We have had, in the span of just 2 weeks, two 18-year-olds go on killing sprees armed with what the critics would call weapons of war. Are guns really the problem here, Jason? Is that a short-sighted solution to a very complicated problem?
Well, I think it is. You know, whether you're right or left, I feel like everybody is offering partial solutions. We're not really realizing that there's pieces of the solution on both sides, but neither are complete. And that ultimately, this really is a spiritual problem that America is going to have to grapple with.
Now, Michael, there's a lot we don't know about this killer, but there's a lot we do, and it fits the profile. Loner, mental health issues, no doubt. Your thoughts as we just start to come to grips with this senseless tragedy in Texas.
And those words that you said, fits the profile, I think are apropos here as we look at many of these mass shootings that have taken place over the years. When you look at what young men are exposed to as boys growing up in our society, those who are bullied or in some way feel left out or alone are then entering into a world of the internet and other places that are giving them radical ideas, and then with fatherlessness and not having a male influence are all contributors to these sorts of problems that create that profile of the kinds of killers we're seeing.
Yeah. Of course, this is all happening on the tail end of COVID. And I got to wonder, Jason, the mental health of kids today. And I know they're saying that that may have been a factor in the Buffalo shooting. Your thoughts on just how the pandemic has impacted the mental health of teenagers today?
Yeah, I'm no expert in the field, but you know, just watching my own kids, watching, you know, society at large, you have to think that it is. I mean, you're seeing increased rates of depression, anxiety, I mean, all these kinds of things that are coming along post-pandemic. And I do think that there is going to be some correlation, some relation to what has happened as to how we have responded to the COVID pandemic. We have shut things down, isolated people, that we're now beginning to see the outcroppings of some of those things.
Michael, every one of those people killed, those young children, were in the same classroom and two teachers. The stuff of nightmares. There's a great debate in this country now about whether or not arming teachers could have prevented this. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Texas has a law that would allow for the arming of teachers if they're trained. Here in Pennsylvania, the law's a bit sketchy in terms of whether teachers or administrators are allowed to have weapons in the schools.
Yeah. Former Governor Cuomo, Jason, spoke at a church in Buffalo last weekend about the Tops shooting. Do you think that Kathy Hochul should be worried about him running as an independent in November? I know the timeline for getting on the ballot is real short here. I think he has only till the end of the month. What are your thoughts there?
You know, I think former Governor Cuomo is doing his best to needle the Democratic Party that he feels abandoned him. I don't think he's going to run for governor at this point. I could be wrong, but I don't think he will. I think this is an opportunity for him to try to be relevant and to continue to be burn the saddle of the donkey party right now.
Yeah, are you surprised the acceptance that he has received from places of worship? I mean, I think this is the second or third church that he spoke at recently since the scandals broke.
Yeah, you know, I've been watching where he is speaking at those. That seems to be the safe place he's going back to are churches in urban areas. But it just boggles my mind when I know where the man stands on so many biblical issues that churches, houses of faith, would just open their doors to him. I just can't comprehend that.
Me neither. The Republican U.S. Senate primary between Dr. Oz and Dave McCormick was over a week ago, Michael, yet we still don't know the results of that. A lot of debate now about those mail-in ballots. Dave McCormick has sued. He wants every vote counted. And now the Republican National Committee is involved in this. What's going on here, Michael?
Well, in some respects, it looks like a repeat of 2020 with the questions that came along with the mail-in ballots and then the courts changing the rules midstream. And so I do think that it raises questions in the minds of people about election security, about election integrity here in Pennsylvania. And it's something that really needs to be solved post-haste because this is an embarrassment for our state and really for the nation.
Yeah, and the recount, we're told, should be done in 2 or 3 weeks. Is that correct?
That's what I'm hearing. And so people need to get another order of popcorn and some soda and sit and watch and see who pulls this one out.
I guess that's how democracy works or doesn't work.
Right.
Jason, we're awaiting that big decision at the Supreme Court. We were told it could happen this week. It hasn't yet. What actions can pro-life New Yorkers, pregnancy care centers in New York be taking to prepare for the onslaught of abortion expansion in the Empire State?
Well, there's a number of things. I think if you're a pro-life pregnancy center or even an advocacy organization like ours, I mean, you're doing what you can to harden your security systems. We are seeing various attacks on entities that are pro-life around the nation. I think there's wisdom in putting up cameras, doing what you can to make sure you're protecting clients that are there and your staff and others. But really, as far as getting to the issue of what a post-Roe America is going to look like, I think that Christians here in the state of New York need to be getting behind a pro-life pregnancy center. If your church is not already supporting one, get them in the missions budget. Offer to be a volunteer. I'd be looking as a family of what can we do? Can we adopt? Can we get involved in foster care? It's going to take so much more for the Christian community to step up to meet this moment. And we're going to be there, I think, legally, but we've got to also be there with the resources and the willing hands to really change the hearts and minds and the sanctity of human life here in the Empire State and across America.
Yeah, be proactive, not reactive. That's great, Jason. Michael, were you surprised? I was stunned that not more of a deal was made of the Supreme Court leaker who spilled the beans on Justice Alito's draft opinion on abortion. Why wasn't more of an investigatory effort launched there?
Well, I think because of the politics of the whole situation. I think the fact is that those who are on the pro-abortion side were happy with the fact that there was a leak, maybe not happy with what was leaked, but happy that there was a leak and embarrassing the Supreme Court in this regard. And politics is what plays into it. And I think there are many people who think that now we have a two-part system. If you're conservative, you're more likely to be investigated and prosecuted. And if you're a liberal, you're not.
Yeah. Jason, $6 a gallon gasoline is what we're told by the end of summer. Of course, New York State's gas tax will kick in next week, but that's only going to cut about 15 or 16 cents off the price you're paying already. What are the chances that this energy crisis will cause a recession next year, if not sooner?
I think it's coming. You know, it's not just the energy crisis. I think other things will contribute to it as well. You cannot just print free money and expect there to be no repercussions for that. I believe that a recession will be coming. I'm not a financial advisor. This is not financial advice. But just watching what's going on in the world today, the actions that we have taken are going to lead some negative consequences in the financial industry.
Yeah. Michael, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, said this week he would welcome President Biden campaigning for him. Does he know something that pretty much every other Democrat in the country doesn't know right now? I mean, you can't get within earshot of Biden on the campaign trail, but Shapiro says, come on into Pennsylvania. I'd welcome your support.
It is a bit confusing, but I guess what I'd attribute that to is the supreme confidence that Josh Shapiro always has. He did this in the election for Attorney General in 2020, where he guaranteed a victory well in advance of the election.
And then finally, this is our final broadcast of this show of the season, but there is plenty to be watching in the coming days, weeks, months ahead. Jason, if you would, in a sentence or two, tell us how we can be praying for New Yorkers for constitutional freedoms.
Yeah, I think our battle here in New York really is going to be defined as that post-Roe decision, and we're going to see a political system that is going after abortion, and we're going to have to respond, you know, appropriately on the pro-life side to advocate for life. And one of the ways we're going to be focusing on that as an organization is really coming alongside those pregnancy centers and helping to raise awareness of their work and getting people to engage higher and higher levels with their work.
And then, Michael, you'll get the final word, but what are you watching in the days, weeks, months ahead? Head in Harrisburg, and how can we be praying for the Pennsylvania Family Institute?
Well, similar to what Jason said, the Supreme Court ruling on the pro-life issue on the Dobbs case is important to us in Pennsylvania, but also there's a 1-2 punch coming because the Pennsylvania Supreme Court could be ruling and taking us in the opposite direction. So that's a big fight that we have ahead. The other one is that we want our working to build a stronger grassroots to empower parents. We're getting so many calls from parents about what's in their school libraries, their curriculum. The phrase that is used by many is grooming children towards LGBT lifestyle, and we need to be praying for parents and for children, not only with what we saw just happen in Texas, but also the onslaught on the moral values of our families.
Well said. Hey, we'll be back in the fall, but hey, if you want to know more about what the Pennsylvania Family Institute is all about, why do you exist, the great work that you do in Harrisburg each and every day, Michael, you've got a great website folks can check out. What is that, sir?
PAFamily.org.
And stay informed on all the issues in New York. Jason, what's your website, sir?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
And Capital Connection airs Fridays during the Noon Report or online anytime at familylife.org. Just ahead, justice, just 330 years late.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Keep an eye on the sky for showers and thunderstorms this afternoon and tonight as a cold front presses into the area. Behind the front, our weather will improve this weekend with slow clearing later tomorrow. High pressure set to deliver bright, warm conditions for Sunday and for Monday Memorial Day itself. Our call for this afternoon, though, rather cloudy, humid into tonight, with showers from time to time. Watch for a thunderstorm with a downpour. High temperatures this afternoon, 70s to near 80, low tonight, 50s and low 60s. Tomorrow, cloudy in the morning, showers, some drizzle, western New York, northwest Pennsylvania, followed by some afternoon sunshine. But skies will stay pretty cloudy across central New York and eastern Pennsylvania with some showers. Highs in the 60s and low 70s. But Sunday, Monday, sunnier, warmer, 70s on Sunday, 80s for high temperatures on Monday.
Thank you very much, Kevin Williams. And finally at noon.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who, me? I'm not a witch at all.
Well, with apologies to Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, we're actually talking about a lady named Elizabeth Johnson who, after nearly 330 years, has legally been declared to have not been a witch. Good or bad. She was one of the women convicted of witchcraft in the infamous Salem witch trials of 1693. Yesterday, the Massachusetts State Senate voted to clear her name. Johnson was a 22-year-old woman living in the North Andover area when she got caught up in those trials along with more than 170 others. Now, she wasn't executed, but her name was never cleared. The effort to get Johnson finally exonerated was spearheaded by an eighth-grade class in Johnson's hometown. And that is the world we live in for Friday, the 27th of May, Memorial Day weekend. As always, thank you for listening. I'm Mark Webster, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.